baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Well, a hello and a happy Monday, everybody. Welcome to the walk-off. I'm Scott Belford. You can see here Adam Mack still a little under the weather. He's got his bad taco up on his screen, but he has roughed it and toughed it out, if you will, and set it all up so that we can still do an episode today. And we're super excited to be joined and have back on the show our good buddy and all-around beautiful baseball mind, Craig Ballard. Welcome back to the walk-off, man. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you so much. It's me thanking you guys. First of all, broken record time, but the work you guys are doing on the walk-off podcast, an absolute must for any Blue Jay fan. It's players coming up through the system. It's media people. It's personalities like myself every Sunday. It's a long time. So I'm really happy to be back on the walk-off. And this isn't just a regular appearance for me, right? This is awesome. Like, I'm jonesing to talk Blue Jay baseball. Like, this is my pleasure right here. I wish Adam was joining us because I love his Blue Jay mind, but this is my pleasure to be talking some Blue Jay baseball on a Monday.
Well, I'm super excited to have you on the show again, buddy. And it's funny you bring up just the off season, and like, this is really when, and it's been interesting, man, because over the last couple of years of doing this cast, our biggest growth has been over the off season because we are such nerds that we just keep going. And so anyone who needs baseball content, we're one of the few still out there. And I know I'm excited just to talk with you because we haven't been able to talk baseball in over a month, I bet, since the World
October
Series
3rd.
Was. Yeah, that's right. October 3rd. It's been too long.
Can you tell I enjoy my appearances on here? When's the last time you're on, Craig? October 3rd, 1 p.m. Anyway, okay.
To the date, nose to the hour. Okay, so we are just under a month into this off season, and still not a lot has happened, man. I mean, all the major free agents minus some relievers, you know, there were some big relievers to go, but minus the relievers, not a lot has happened yet. And I'm starting to feel like we probably still got to wait till these winter meetings in a week. Eh? Are you kind of getting the same impression here?
You know, what's funny is a year ago from right now, we were all devastated because it didn't even look like there would be baseball. So I think that experience has taken us out of the what the norm has become,
right,
in baseball free agency. Remember 2019, 2020, 2021, by the time players went to spring training, you could make an all-star team of the guys still available. You could make an all-star team of the guys still available. And that's when spring training started. So I think it's getting back to a little bit more normal. But yes, especially if we don't see dominoes fall at the winter meetings. Everybody's sitting right there in the darn room. You're all sitting in the same hotel. Like, wheeling and dealing gets done. So that is the next thing I'm really looking forward to. I'm looking forward to this Veterans Committee to see who gets into the Hall of Fame. I'm looking forward to these winter meetings as well.
Yeah, last year was weird because it was such a feast or famine, right? Because they had that deadline before the lockout, and then there was like all that action in early December, and we're like, oh my God. And then all of a sudden, you know, the lockout hits, and then it's just famine for months. So at least we're not dealing with a lockout. So, my dude, everyone has talked Teoscar Hernandez trade to death, right? But without a corresponding move to this trade, there's still a lot of uncertainty as to what exactly is happening, what direction this front office is going in. And it has made fans, for lack of a better word, pretty squirrely, I think is the right term.
I know
a lot of people are upset with this return, which I think honestly goes to show you that the market on a power bat on 1 year left, over $10 million owing, for a slightly below defensive outfielder, it's just not as high as maybe some people would hope it would be. And I think Hunter Renfroe is a good comparable here. Ooh. If you look at the Brewers, right? Very similar money, very similar profile. I think Teoscar's a better player, but marginally. But the better return was on the Blue Jays. But I loved your take on this trade, you know, because you truly, when you put out your video there on TikTok and Twitter, it was very much a glass half full kind of outlook. And I'd love for you to just kind of regurgitate your thoughts on this trade, if you will.
Yeah. And you're right. A squirrely is the fan base. Absolutely. I hear it. what I would really recommend to as many fan base or many people in the fan base that can do this, it's not fun. It's not enjoyable. It's not sexy. It's not what a fan wants to do, but you have to bring the business aspect in. That's what I find missing the most. You just laid out the business aspect of it. It's a big deal. We're upwards of 2 years. Could we make the argument 3 years where if a Tao re-up was coming, they had a massive window to discuss it. And as far as we see, it was never even discussed. So Tao or Lourdes being moved was going to happen. Absolutely. Yes. What were you going to get back for the return? You just said it. That's a 1 year rental. Tao has never made, I think it was you actually, Scott, yesterday on the long toss that was making the point that, you know, Tao probably wants to hit free agency. He's not, or might have been, somebody was saying he's never made the huge money. He'll want to see what's out there for him in free agency. So even the team that you're trading him to really has their mind wrapped around that this is probably a 1 year rental. So the return assets coming back are going to be tempered. They're going to be for that 1 year rental. The specific return assets coming back, though, That left-handed pitcher, Macko, he slides right into the Blue Jays' top 10 prospects. That, I'm not sneezing at that. A lefty who's developed pitches as he's come up through the system. When he walked in the door, when he was drafted, his curveball was his calling card. He had a major league-ready curveball at 18 years old. When he came in the minors,
Which is so rare. Yeah.
And he walked in the minors throwing in about the high 80s. That came into the high 90s. He's sitting at 97 right now. Like, we are seeing this guy develop right before our eyes. At 21 years old, this is a yes, please. And then, of course, the actual bullpen piece coming back, who I very much like. How much talk has there been about swing and miss? This guy's a swing and miss guy. You add him with a Bass at the back of the bullpen to set up a Romano. Now you have several swing and miss guys. I'm huge on who Zach Pop is going to be for this Blue Jay team going forward. I take your Bass strikeout to get one out. I take that and I'll see that and I'll call that and I'll raise you a Zach Pop. Bass to get that strikeout is what, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pitches? Pop to get that double play, that's one pitch and two outs. So I'll take that strikeout pitcher and I'll raise you a Zach Pop for importance going forward. But as far as the Tao trade in particular, I did think it was a good return haul. And I absolutely think that it was to set up more to come. Yes. The Gritches trade last year, Gritches for Tapia, that was a house cleaning move. It freed up about $5 million for this year. This move frees up about $14 million. Now you're up to about $20 million. And it's not, this isn't, Pittsburgh's buyers now, but like a Kansas City, this isn't a seller move at all. It decreases the payroll, yes, but it doesn't decrease the payroll because they want to contribute to Rogers, to the owner's bottom line. It decreases the payroll because they want a little bit more flexibility, because for the fourth offseason in a row, Ryu, Springer, Gausman, for the fourth offseason in a row, I think the Toronto Blue Jays are going big game hunting. So this trade here, I like what it brings in the short term, yes. But absolutely, there's, as you've mentioned, there's not just another shoe to drop, Scott and Adam, at the Walk Off Podcast. There's not just another shoe to drop. There's a massive another shoe to drop from this trade.
And I really love hearing that. And I think you are onto something here. I mean, the money total, if you can even add another $5 million with outrighting Tapia and releasing Bradley Zimmer, right? So yes, there are holes to fill, but there is money to play with here. I know you brought up swing and miss, and obviously this is something that has been a little bit of an Achilles heel in this bullpen for years, right? And when you look at this Blue Jays bullpen, how are you feeling right now? I think the addition of Eric Swanson was an excellent move, but I know that it got a little bit of pushback from some of the fan base who was frustrated to see he wasn't that high velo guy. You personally, Craig, do you care if the swing and miss comes from a guy who's throwing 100, or are you fine with seeing swing and miss from a guy throwing 94?
What a great question. For me personally, I feel like I'm almost in the minority of this. The velocity, I do like the velocity. Who doesn't like the velocity?
Of course.
All the days was chicks love the long ball, the Mark McGwire.
That's Greg right, yeah.
Well, in this day, who doesn't like velocity? Sure, absolutely, yes. For me, and why I love this question so much, I'm huge on top of the strike zone, bottom of the strike zone. I'm huge on playing with that batter's eye level. If you've ever been in the batter's box, you know what a big deal that is. Never mind the inside outside. That's already its own animal. Playing up and down in the strike zone, playing with your eye level like that is a big deal. Swanson does that as good as any reliever in the game. So it's not only 94, 95, it's 94, 95 at the very top of the strike zone. If you miss at the top of the strike zone and it comes down, now that's 95 right down the middle, but you're in a lot of trouble. Swanson doesn't miss his spots. He's at the top of the strike zone and he's got his off-speed stuff at the bottom of the strike zone. So I think his swing and miss absolutely continues. I don't think velocity, the best quote I've ever heard in my life on pitching was Bill Cotto. Now, this is really dating myself. He was a Blue Jay in 1984, set the Blue Jays save records with I think it was 11. So, yeah, Jays are just getting started. But anyway, but he had this quote on pitching. He said, it's one thing to throw a baseball through a brick wall. It is quite another thing to know which brick it's going to go through. And that really formed my thinking on baseball early on. 92, if it's pinpoint, that's a yes, please. Now, Mitch Williams was 99. What brick was he throwing it through? Are you kidding? Was he going to hit the wall for crying out loud? Like, so I really value the pinpoint accuracy and the setting up the batter that guys like him bring to the table.
See, I feel very similarly to this. In fact, it's one of the reasons that I was so high on Anthony Bass when they brought him in, right? Mm-hmm. And I know another guy that some fans felt like this is the dude you're bringing in. Yes, his numbers are great, but we need a high velo guy. And again, Adam puts it best, right? Velo is that cheddar on the top. You know, it's nice, it's great, but if you're not hitting your spots, it's almost irrelevant. So I am curious, I just want to talk the negative side of this trade that people are bringing up. And just see if you can put some perspective on it, because one thing that has come out several times about Swanson is the Mariners didn't use him in the playoffs.
They did though. I don't know why people keep saying that. Yeah,
they did. And I was just going to say they did. People argue, well, they lowered his leverage, which yeah. I guess. And they also bring up the fact that last year was really his first impressive year with the numbers. Now, personally, I look at this and I go, this is a guy who found it. But, there is something to be said for a track record. So I'm not poo-pooing that mentality from that side of the fan base. But I would love to hear your opinion on if maybe that's being blown a little out of proportion.
Well, I'm right with you on that. I feel like that we've seen this many times from different pitchers that where they get it. Now, you can even we can even look at, you know, how did he get it? Was this something that's sustainable? I think it is sustainable.
I'm so glad you're bringing this up. Yes.
First of all, he's going to be paired with Pete Walker, so that could be very good. But his off-speed pitches last season was really the reason for the season. That was really what developed last season. Now he comes into a locker room where Alek Manoah gets insane movement on his sliders. Jose Barrios gets insane movement. Like, I could see that pitch only continuing to develop. I could see that pitch only getting better. And the Seattle not using him or moving him down pay, however you want to put it, Seattle was in a position where the Blue Jay fan base wanted their bullpen to be. Seattle's bullpen was stacked. I don't even know that it's
truly
a peak that he was pushed, that Swanson was, you know, pushed down or anything along those lines. It's not that tells a story that it was performance based. But in reality, I think it's not like what if Munoz, like what if those other relievers got hurt and Swanson was given those eighth inning at bats. It's not like Seattle was sitting there saying, what? Got to go to who? They would have been fine with that. So I'm excited about the addition of Swanson. If you look back to a year ago now, that Swanson pop, that's Yimi Garcia, there's been some guys added to this bullpen that I am excited about. And I really, we talk about that Teo trade. There's still more to come because you're going to replace that left fielder. I will be very surprised. And on paper, it's not even a joke of a bullpen right now. It's a decent bullpen right now. I still say I'll be surprised if there's not another move coming, because we know a catcher is going to be traded. What's coming back? I wouldn't be surprised if a bullpen arm is coming there as well. Does Biggio or Santiago Espinal have value around the league? Because if that's the case, I wouldn't be surprised to see either one of them moved to shore up this bullpen as well. So if you're a Blue Jay fan concerned with the bullpen, it's the same messaging as you're concerned about how do we replace Tail. Take the breath, give it a minute. No need to panic on any of these things until you get your notification on your phone that says, hey, Blue Jays report to spring training today. That is the exact moment to look at the roster and say, okay, what's happening now? What's going on here?
I think a little bit of what's lost on this trade is the fact, And you mentioned it off the top, right? That you truly feel that this front office is going big game hunting again. Yeah. And you know what's really difficult to do is to go big game hunting, but not have a spot for that game. Wow. You know, like it's one thing to say, listen, we are going to move Teo to, let's say, a free agent outfielder, or we are going to make sure you're the everyday guy. And it's a totally other thing to be like, look, there's a hole. There is a hole that needs filling. You're the guy. Do you think when you look at the free agents out there, and I'm not saying that the Blue Jays necessarily need to fill this outfield hole with a free agent, however they go about doing it, honestly, I'm indifferent whether they go out and sign a big name pitcher to free agency and use their assets to make a trade for an outfielder or vice versa. However they get it done, they get it done. But when you look at this outfield and the market that's out there, is there anybody in particular that you have a little bit of a yes, please bring these guys in?
Boy, but there's so many to choose from too, because it's funny the way you say that. Yes, please. The only one I've migrated towards, yes, please, of the free agents, and I made a video about players the Jays were linked to, and I said I did not want Bellinger in that video. I am really cozying up to a Cody Bellinger signing here, to a Cody Bellinger addition. The first thing I want to scrap right out the bat is so many Jays fans talk about, no, Jays are in win-now mode. You cannot bring in a reclamation like Cody Bellinger. Well, no matter how long you've been watching baseball, I'm definitely the oldest one here, unfortunately, but it doesn't matter here. Even if you just walked in the door, you're brand new to baseball. Rob Manfred has these changes coming fast and furious. So no matter how long you've been watching baseball, you've seen the game change. One thing that remains the case, one of the few things that remains true in Major League Baseball, has always been true, it remains to be true. You can be a World Series contender, very legit. We just saw the Houston Astros do it with Martin Maldonado in the ninth spot. You can be a legit World Series contender and still hide a weaker hitter in the ninth spot if that hitter is top tier defensively. That describes Cody Bellinger. If you shift Cody Bellinger into center field, now all of a sudden, right off the bat, we have a top tier. We may be able to have a conversation. Is there a better defensive center fielder than Cody Bellinger? It wouldn't be a long conversation, because even if you could convince me there is one, you're not convincing me there's two or three. He is top tier defensively in center field. And we've heard Atkins talk for 2 years now about run prevention. Remember, they had Santiago Espinal last season at third base. Didn't need a third baseman. Went to bring in Matt Chapman, run prevention. Bring in the versatile defensive Whit Merrifield, run prevention. How does the team in the playoffs have Bradley Jr. and Zimmer on the roster? Because they both speak to run prevention. So Bellinger speaks to run prevention big time. That moves Springer over to right field. Producer Clark, I always see him in your chats. Yeah, I know he's an admirer of it. Yeah, absolutely. Producer Clark's awesome. He made a point on Twitter the other day. What if a new center fielder not only moves Springer over to right field, but what if that adds 15 to 25 healthy games for Springer? Wow, what a big deal. What a big deal. And on top of that, Teo's arm against Springer, forget about it. Absolute blow. Teo's superior. Everything else from defense, Springer is the superior defender to Teo. So you've massively upgraded and improved your outfield defense. And for those so concerned about the batting, the hitting, let me tempt your tummy with the taste of nuts and honey. If you know that reference, you'll know what I'm saying here. But I looked into Cody Bellinger last season when defenses had to play straight up against him. So no shift. And we know there is no shift anymore. Mm-hmm. That's a 302 hitter, Scott. That's a 302 hitter straight up, Bellinger last season. His OPS in the nine spot last season, he played 31 games in the nine spot for the Dodgers. His OPS was 722. That's better than all but two teams that made the playoffs, what they got out of their nine spot. I just said Martin Maldonado, the Astros hit him in the nine spot all season long. And as soon as they can move on from him with Christian Vasquez, they did. You can still have a nine hitter that, as long as they're stellar defensively, you can still be a very good team. So where I was, my initial reaction on Bellinger as well is I just couldn't see him taking a one-year deal. I thought there'd be a lot of teams willing to give him a 3-4 year contract and say, we're willing to commit to you as our everyday center fielder. So the fact that it does look like a one-year deal right now, man, I can't believe, Scott, that I've gotten to the point where I was initially against wanting Cody Bellinger. I am now all the way to the point where I'm going to be disappointed if Cody Bellinger isn't a Blue Jay. I'm very surprised I've gotten there.
So my question for you, Craig, is, are you happy with Cody Bellinger as the everyday center fielder, just giving him the keys to the car. Like, listen, because there's been lots of talk, and I love what you're saying. And I personally feel like Cody Bellinger would be excellent on this team. Now, that said, and I don't know if he'd come if we go out and get a Nimmo, right? But that's my dream, is filling the hole in center field with a Brandon Nimmo, and then also taking a flyer on Cody Bellinger, who can, you know, play center field as well and come in defensively at the end of games, who can take some time away from Teo in left field. Maybe you can split, do the splits a little bit there with him. And as a fourth outfielder, I absolutely love what Cody Bellinger looks like. Now, I understand that from his agent's perspective and Bellinger's perspective isn't necessarily what you want to do to create value going into 2024 when that 1 year show me deal is up. Do you think there's any possibility that is a scenario?
Well, I do, because if I'm Cody Bellinger and his agent, even if I'm looking at Toronto, even if it is the fourth outfielder, it's only fourth outfielder right here, right now. If they're having an open, honest conversation, they're saying, listen, when's the last time Lourdes Gurriel put a full season together? You know, George Springer's not putting a full season together. Like, yeah, there's going to be at-bats available on this team, even as the fourth. Raimel Tapia.
How many games Tapia played. Thank you.
Yeah. So I can still see that happening. Now, I think you're already understanding that would mean that he really wanted to be a Blue Jay. Because again, I still think other teams would have offers that don't make him the fourth outfielder. And again, that's only fourth outfielder for right now. Yeah. But yeah, I see. I should have mentioned this as well. Part of what's informing my whole take on Bellinger is I'm way in the minority here. And I don't know why. I don't even have a good answer for this. I'm not hugely excited about Nimmo. Well, I know one thing I'm not excited is I think Blue Jay fans are massively underestimating what his contract is going to be. His contract will be north of George Springer. And I think that's going to have people's eyes bug out.
You actually believe that, eh? Yeah. That is really interesting. I know that's funny because on Long Toss last night, I know that Connor brought that up too. And he's like, I think people are underestimating his market and he's probably going to get 6-165 ish, which made me go, what?
I think so, like, too. Yeah.
And don't get me wrong. He's a great player. I really do like Brandon Nimmo. I like where he fits on this team. There are always risks with signing a free agent. I'm well aware of his injury problems. And I know Eno Saris with The Athletic brought up a really interesting stat where he was saying that if you go through all of these injury-plagued players, whenever they have a full season, they're not any more likely to be injured again after that full season than anybody else without injury concerns, right?
So,
I mean, obviously, if you're struggling with injuries and it's year after year, that's different. But he did just come off 151 games. Do you think if you had to go 6 years, 150, is that a no on Nimmo?
It is. And again, I don't have a good enough reason. I don't know what it is about Nimmo. The strongest take for Nimmo for me is, again, I'm going back to producer Clark. So he ran the Wheat Sox. Remember, as part of that fantasy baseball team. They won it all, by the way. They won it all.
Yeah, incredible.
Yeah. And now, so they early on in our time there, Clark made a move to pick up, made a big trade and picked up a Francisco Lindor. So he was doing a lot of the heavy lifting. So I know Clark watched a lot of they drafted Jeff McNeil against my dead body. I didn't want anything to do with Jeff McNeil. Yeah. He killed it. So I know Clark's watching the Mets because he wants to say, hey, Craig, you goof. And because I know he was watching a lot of Mets baseball and he was constantly commenting that, you know, who's always in the mix of these rallies? You know, who's always doing things? You know, who's a table setter over here in New York? This Nimmo guy, this Brandon. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, because I'll tell you, that wasn't my experience watching the Mets, but I digress. But that is a bridge. A George Springer contract for Nimmo for me is a bridge too far, especially when you have such bullets in the chamber. I mean, a catcher trade is going to bring you back something really good. Mm-hmm. There could be other moves as well if you're willing to part with some of the prospects that could bring you back something really good. So I just don't know that level of a commitment to a Nimmo is something I'm interested in. Let me throw one to you here, Scott. I was thinking about this last night, and it actually blew my mind. I haven't heard anybody talking about this. I think there might be some there. We're all talking about what the return haul is going to be for the catcher. What about if the catcher trade is one of the catchers plus a Ryu or a Kikuchi? So it's actually a salary dump bring, you'd get back, you'd still get back a nice piece, like you still get back like a nice bullpen piece or something like that. But now you've got the savings are already in tow. Now you've got all these savings. Now we really are, hey, get Carlos Correa on line one, get Aaron Judge on line two, get DeGrom on line three. What's Justin Verlander's schedule look like today? Like, we're talking the biggest game hunting that the Toronto Blue Jays have ever done in their franchise's history. I could see something like that happening.
I love that take, and that's a really interesting one, and you kind of brought it up. I haven't heard that either. No. So I love that you're thinking that way. And it's interesting because last night on Long Toss, I know Garth brought up that the Blue Jays, yes, they've gone big game hunting. Yes, they've spent some major money, but they have never done the proverbial mega deal.
Yeah.
Do you think this front office has it in them to do it? Because they've yet to prove that they can, but that doesn't mean they won't, right?
Yeah, 1,000% I think they do. I think if anything, there's the ghosts of the J.P. Ricciardi era maybe informing some of these decisions. Do you remember J.P. Ricciardi for his first couple of years, they finished in last place, dead last, the Blue Jays. And he told Rogers ownership, he said, man, look at the payrolls. The Toronto Blue Jays cannot compete with these payrolls. And finally, one year, Rogers said, for your next 3 years of the budget, we're increasing it by $100 million. So increase this year's by 33.3, spend it all now, do whatever you're going to do. He spent it all now. They brought in AJ Burnett, BJ Ryan.
Yep.
And they went from fifth place to fourth place, right back to last place in that 3 year span. Didn't mean a thing. So there's Rogers saying, for the money that we were spending that was unacceptable, the results were still the same, fourth and fifth place. So why would we inject another, huge amount of money into something like this? And it's the same ownership group who I really think have a lot more faith in Shapiro and Atkins. So yes. I do think that they will open up that vault when the time has come, but it can't just be the pitch, the presentation from Shapiro and Atkins cannot be X amount of money, a huge contract for this player. And guys, this might be good for us. It has to be this championship. Here's how this player wins us the championship. Here's how this player means that you need to start getting your Rogers Blue Jays championship merchandise ready to go. It has to be that level of a slam dunk. But remember we talked before, the Shapiro and Atkins, they built that sustainable playoff contender in Cleveland. And right as that playoff window opened, that's when they came over to Toronto. So there's no way that Rogers could have called up Shapiro at the time and said, hey, Mark, you know, all that heavy lifting, those years of losing, years of night, no sleep in Cleveland. Now the fruits of that labor, that window's finally opening up. How'd you like to abandon that window, come over to Canada and do all that fruits of labor again, do all that heavy lifting again? No. They must have been clear that, honestly, Mark, when you come over here, there is heavy lifting to do. You do have to rebuild our organization. They felt like Anthopoulos ravaged the organization. But Paul, Mark Shapiro, you will be thrilled once you've done the heavy lifting. Once you've opened that window, you will be thrilled at the money we have for you. Cleveland doesn't have that money for you. You will be thrilled at what we have for you. So I really think that Rogers would commit to something like that.
Let's talk catching for a second here. I know that this is one subject that has probably been talked about more than any on the Blue Jays landscape over the last year. And it's because they kind of have an embarrassment of riches at that catching position. They have three studs. And I know that I have gotten personally, I wouldn't say hate, but a lot of people disagreeing with me because when I look at that trio, the guy I feel should be moved is Alejandro Kirk. Now, I have reasonings for this. I know what a stud he was. I'm well aware Silver Slugger. I'm well aware All-Star. I'm well aware that the guy offensively was, if not the best catcher in the league last year, I mean, there is an argument for it, and he's at least a top three in almost every category. Now, my reason for moving Kirk has a lot to do with the unbalanced lineup that we're currently looking at when you look at this roster. And when I say that, I mean the DH spot is clogged up, especially, I mean, we already talked about getting George Springer out of center field, which I think is going to help. And I know I've brought this stat up a few times, but George Springer, 33 years old, there is only a handful of guys over 6'3" and over 230 pounds who have played center field past the age of 32.
Wow. Right?
Like it is almost, for a guy that size, it is almost not done. So I think that is a priority to move him out of center field. But even if they don't, okay, He look at how much time he spent at DH over the last 2 years. And I obviously injuries are a roll of the dice and he could have a completely healthy season. I'm not saying that's an impossibility, but you do need to kind of just from the past foresee that maybe some spots are going to be taken up at that DH role from George Springer. Let's say 40. That's still a substantial amount.
Absolutely.
And that's still less than we've seen him at DH over the last 2 years, by the way.
Wow.
Then you look at Kirk and you got to have Kirk's bat in that lineup, right? You have to. So he's catching two of five outings a week. Mm-hmm. So you got to find a spot for him 3 days a week at DH. It just feels like there's no way they're moving on from Springer. You know, he was their guy.
Good point.
They've got very good candidates in Danny Jansen and Gabriel Moreno. And by the way, I think sometimes Blue Jays fans hear me talk about trading Kirk and they think that I have like a dislike of him. I freaking love Kirk. I think he's a supreme talent. But I look at the landscape out there of teams who need a catcher who is young, controllable, and affordable. And buddy, it is like 25 teams. And I just think of what we could get back for him. And I'm not saying that there isn't big value in Danny Jansen and Gabriel Moreno. There is. It just seems like for a fit, Kirk is the guy. But I'm really curious because you always have unique perspectives. And I'm wondering if you're on the same train or if you even, I know you even brought up the possibility of trading two catchers in the past. Yeah. Would love to hear your thought on this. Most excellent negative position for this front office to be in, right? Like it's a bit of a quagmire, but what a lovely little quagmire to be in.
Yeah. I talked earlier about it doesn't matter how long you've been watching the game of baseball. So many things have changed. Well, it does matter how long you've been watching the baseball. None of us have ever seen an embarrassment. Like catcher is not the position that teams have embarrassment of riches at. This is completely unprecedented. You have three major league studs on, like, are you absolutely kidding me right now? This is unprecedented. To your point about Kirk, we were mere months ago, if the Cleveland Guardians were willing to play ball, that was the centerpiece of a Jose Ramirez. Is Jose Ramirez a bit of a big deal? That was the centerpiece of a Jose Ramirez superstar trade mere months ago. The only reason it didn't take place is Cleveland ended up with that re-up with Ramirez. So I'm right.
And Craig,
there with,
since then, Silver Slugger all-star to his.
But that's all that's happened. That's all that's happened, by the way. Started in the all-star game. Yeah, exactly correct. Now, so I do think that you're selling high on Kirk. Where my take is a little different on the catcher spot is I don't have one in mind. I think all three will fetch. For the Blue Jays, I think you have to set the standard in your boardroom and say, listen, we're coming out of this catcher trade with a number two starter to pair between Manoa and Tiedemann for years to come. Or we're so happy with our bullpen, it's top and big. Or we've replaced whatever your goal is, and then that's the catcher you're going to trade because it fetches you back the most. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said with me with Tua, I've long said if I'm the Blue Jays, I'm letting it known that all three catchers are available. Like if I've got a team on line one right now that wants to talk trade for Slim Daddy Vladdy, I'm not even taking that call. So I'm letting it be known. Hey, we're absolutely we're open for shop. We're talking business on any of my three catchers. And I need to be crystal clear on this because I'm not talking about giving any of them away. I'm talking
yes,
about.
And thank
yes,
you.
Right? Yes.
Very
yes.
Important, everybody.
Yes. Yes. That's what people keep when they hear my two catcher trade, their immediate reaction, Craig, if I look at Twitter and I see we've traded two catchers, I'm going to be absolutely heartbroken. And I say to them in that split second, I get it, but take a breath and keep going through your feed. Cause your eyes are going to bug out at the return hall. You're going to be thrilled. You're going to be thrilled. There's a big deal trades coming. So I wouldn't mind trading two of them, bringing in a Christian Vasquez as my veteran to pair with whoever, or Contreras to pair with whoever the lone remaining catcher is.
Because, and Craig, you're with me, right? Experience matters. It's important.
Oh, you blew my mind on that George Springer stat, the center fielder stat. On the long toss yesterday, you blew my mind with the 10 years of experience. What champions don't have an experienced catcher back there? Like, that was all... That was all really big time stuff as far as I was concerned. So yeah, so I do agree that the experience matters. I personally, I'm going to be thrilled either way. If it's one or two catchers that still remain, I'm going to be thrilled. I'm looking forward to the catcher trade because I know it's going to bring back something impressive. And I just think the market is just, St. If you're a team that's ready to win now, is St. Louis somebody like that? You need, I mean, my God, Danny Jansen. If you're a team that fancies yourself as, you know, not maybe not next year, but going forward, you've got a real nice young core, like what Pittsburgh's got going there, but we don't have a catcher we're happy with. Man, Gabriel Moreno, wow. Send us the King's ransom for Gabriel Moreno.
Right.
If you want somebody who is just a pure hitter, the Blue Jays took Alejandro Kirk and put him in their four spot, for crying out loud. Like, if you just want an absolute hitter, Alejandro's your guy. So it's just, there's something for everybody. You say 25, man, every single team in baseball should be involved in these trades. So I'm just really excited. Bottom line, I'm really excited about the Blue Jay catcher trade. And I personally don't have one in mind that I hope it's going to be one or the other. If anything, I hope it's not Jansen, because you'll go nuts if it's Jansen.
I will go nuts if it's Jansen, but I will. I also am prepared, right? Like, I'm well aware that whoever they trade, there's going to be good reasoning behind it. And I think the haul back will make me happy. I do love Danny Jansen. He's probably my number one out of the three, but I am not by any means the guy who's going to be like, how dare they, right? Like, and it's kind of interesting. You even look at this trade landscape for catchers. I mean, other than Sean Murphy with the A's, who is also an excellent catcher, there's not a heck of a lot out there for young, controllable dudes.
Yeah, and which is such a good point. And that's so cool for the Blue Jays, because now if anybody is not willing to come or looking at Oakland's asking price for Murphy, how many of those teams are going to say, wow, geez, that's expensive. You know, yeah. If we're going to pay that, get the Blue Jays on line one. Then. If we're willing to pay that, get the Jays on line one.
Okay, to start with, thank you. We talked this catcher trio problem or lack thereof problem a lot. And I always appreciate a little bit different perspective. And I think that just whatever happens, but I do like that you really emphasize the fact, guys, let's not freak out about this speculation, because there will be a haul coming back and we will be happy despite feeling that sadness and loss like we did with Teoscar. And I think that's why there's so much negative feelings around the Teoscar trade, is like, he was a lovable dude, right? And he had tenure, so right? Yeah. He'd been here for a while. So we all had a chance to fall in love with him, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the last thing I'll say on the catcher, for, because I see a lot of Blue Jay fans concerned with, well, if you trade Jansen, we want Moreno and Kirk calling these games going for. I don't believe for a millisecond that John Schneider lets any of these catchers call anything. I think it's all coming from Shapiro and Atkins down to Walker and Schneider, and then disseminated. Is that the way to put it? Disseminated or told to the catcher. Yes. Like, I don't think the Blue Jays are worried about who's going to be calling these games at all. I think they're looking, management's looking in the mirror and saying right here, who's going to be calling the games.
That's interesting. That's an interesting take. I like that. Let's change gears here, Craig. Would love to hear your opinion on Bo Bichette. I actually just saw a stat on Twitter from Foolish Baseball. And basically what they did is they showed his swinging at pitches outside the zone year to year since he has joined the league. So in 2020, he swung at 45% of pitches outside the zone. In 2021, in 2021,
decreased, right?
42%.
Okay.
And then 38 last year. Okay. So there is hope there. Like, the guy is, and these aren't even minor numbers. Like, these are, you know, in 2 years, he's improved 7% on swinging at pitches outside the zone. If he can do that again and bring it down to about 35%, now he's even a little above league average. And all of a sudden, you know, you feel a little more comfortable in those situations where there's two outs, runners at second and third, and you need Bo's at the plate, and you're like, oh God, just don't make a bad swing choice. But there's always that talk of the defensive end with him. So where are you at on Bo Bichette as our starting shortstop going into his age 25 season? Are you comfortable giving him this other shot? Are you starting to get to the point where a lot of fans are, where your patience, that the rope is getting shorter? Where are you at?
I feel like I'm way in the minority on Bo as well, because I've never thought there was a re-up coming for Bo. I've talked about this on the long toss before. Bo Bichette went out of his way. I think he's on like 54,000 less, 54,000 US, which is like 1.2 million Canadian, for crying out loud anyway. But he's playing for a lot less money this season on purpose, on purpose because he doesn't agree with how the Blue Jays run their pre-arbitration system. Now the Jays will say, hey, we think it's competitive. We think it's in line, whatever. I also asked the question, where's Dante Bichette? And everyone kept telling me, well, he quit the team because of that COVID. We've been back for over a year now. The COVID is way in our rear view. Not actually COVID, yeah. but the COVID baseball repercussions yes. are way in our rear view. Where's Dante Bichette? I don't think this relationship with the Bichettes and the Blue Jays is strong. I've never thought there was a re-up coming for him. I think the best thing for him is to move to second. Yes. You talk about those swings and misses decreasing. That's built. You say, can that continue? It will built in continue if it's September Bo. September Bo, all season long, we talked about, and it's the reason for this. We talked about, listen, if you're going up to the plate with a pitch in mind for that first pitch that you want to attack, man, do I love that. But there was a period at the end of that for so many Blue Jays, including Bo. Like, in other words, if that's the pitch, I get a fastball. If it's in the on-deck circle, if it's down, doesn't matter where it is. If it's the fastball, I'm letting it rip. There was no discipline there. Now, September, way different scenario, way different right. scenario. Forcing the pitcher into the strike zone. And Bo's bat in the strike zone plays to all fields, for crying out loud. We start to see those results. I think this would be the fourth offseason in a row. We constantly see the Blue Jays kicking tires on other shortstops every offseason. And Ross Atkins, every offseason, he says, I'm in constant communication with Bo, and Bo's attitude is always the exact same. If you think there's a shortstop out there that improves our team, then your follow-up text to me will be letting me know what my new position is. That Bo's always say, hey, if there's a move that improves our team at shortstop, then you let me know what my new position is. And I just don't understand how second base just isn't a move that just speaks for itself. I'm huge on Whit Merrifield. I mean, I don't know if we're going to talk about Whit Merrifield. I think is the X factor in mm-hmm. baseball for the Blue Jays next leg. The fan base is not ready for what Whit Merrifield's going to bring to the table as a side note. So I'm not looking for another second baseman, but moving Bo over to second, just everybody went nuts. All non-Blue Jay fans went nuts that Slim Daddy Vladdy won the Gold Glove this season. Well, Blue Jay fans know it's because he's saving Bo from throwing errors multiple times yes. every darn game. Yes. Vladdy's that good. That throw from short from Bo, the addition of Chapman did not help Bo like we thought it would because the fielding was never Bo's issue. It's those throws that mm-hmm. is his issue. At second, it's such a different animal. Somebody blew my mind the other day on a live, said, what about Bo in center field? Like, I don't even mind thinking outside the box things. Because another season of Bo at shortstop, don't we know what we're going to get? That's going to be 25 throwing. Like, don't we already know what we're going to get from that? Yes, the hitting is elite. So we need to round hole, square pin. We need to find a way to get that bat in the lineup. 1,000,000,000%, yes. But does it have to be as the everyday shortstop? Man, I've seen this movie quite a few times. And Scott, I will not be surprised at all if Bo Bichette is in a blockbuster trade.
So let's get crazy then. Okay. Let's yeah. say, let's go to, I like you bringing that up. Okay. So let's take this in two different directions. Let's start with, let's say the Blue Jays do go out and get Cody Bellinger. Let's say that is their center fielder splitting time with Whit Merrifield, who is also proficient in center field, as well as George Springer can play some center field you don't want him there very often because of the injury thing, but you know, in a yeah. need situation, obviously he just played 2 years. His whole career has been a center fielder. He can play the position just fine. So let's say they bring in Bellinger and he's pretty much our everyday center fielder. But now all that money that we have been talking about all of a sudden gets focused on the big four, right? And they start shining that light on the Dansby Swanson, Xander Bogaerts, Trey Turner, Carlos Correa. Do you think that that's a legit possibility for this front office? And which of the four do you think fits the needs of this team the most?
I really do think it's a legit possibility. I really do. It takes us back to that we were talking about before, that the catcher trade would have a reused contract attached. Or Kikuchi Andrews, like I still think some money needs to be freed up because they have been clear that they don't want to go into the luxury tax. I think Garth is not happy with that. Garth, and I hear you, but that's a whole separate conversation. Garth's point is, I get it, and they work with a budget, and I get it, but it's owned by Rogers. So why is there a budget? And if there is, why isn't this the budget? Like, I get it.
Yeah.
I understand that part of it, but I still think for them to big yeah. game hunt, as you mentioned, they would want to
clear some
like
money.
That.
They do,
I don't
yes.
think they're averse to any of that at all. Trey Turner hitting in the two spot for the Toronto
oh
Blue
my God.
Shortstop. I mean, just insane. Absolutely insane. Bogaerts, if you brought in a Bogarts, who I love, who I absolutely love, and that's the gift that keeps on giving because it massacres the Red Sox
yes,
as well.
So right.
So much, yeah, so much stuff here. So much good stuff. It's why I would love an Aaron Judge to massacre the – anyway. But, yeah, I would not be surprised at all. That's one thing I've said on this show many times. My favorite thing about Shapiro and Atkins, what I respect the most of them, is they kick tires better than any regime I've ever seen in sports. Never mind baseball, in sports. They know everything happening with every player. What's that player's eligibility? What would their contract look like if we brought them on? What would we have to? They know what's happening with everybody. So they will be in on these conversations. I firmly believe that to be true.
Yeah, you can say a lot about this front office, but you cannot say they don't do their homework. They are,
I think so,
as thorough as it comes.
Yeah, that's always been. That's why I was so stunned when John Schneider was hired right away. They didn't even wait till the World Series was done to see what candidate. That's part of why I was so surprised with the John Schneider hiring. But I don't think it's far-fetched at all, Adam. In fact, I'll be downright surprised if we don't. Somebody was saying the other day, like a couple of days ago, hey, about time for us to hear that Blue Jays are a surprise suitor for this player. It's about time that we do hear that, because I absolutely think the Blue Jays will be involved in these things. If the 2023 season starts and Bo Bichette is the starting shortstop, that's hardly the end of the world. That's hardly sky is falling. That's hardly Shapiro and Atkins. What the heck happened there? But to your point, absolutely aren't better options out there, and Bo moving over to second just seems inevitable, and it seems like the right thing to do, right move.
So let's get really crazy and say, rather than moving Bo to second, they're just moving Bo out of Toronto.
Yeah,
in that scenario, obviously they have a plan for bringing in a shortstop. Obviously this front office is too thorough to not have a plan. And I know that the fan base will probably lose their mind if this happens. But if Bo is moved, it is also going to bring back a haul, correct?
We open with Ronald Acuna and we go from there.
Yeah. Okay. I love it. Let's talk John Schneider for a second, because you were one of the few guys out there on the Blue Jays landscape of folks talking the talk that you weren't by no means were you out there banging the drum being like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened in Blue Jays history. But you also were like, you know what? I'm a little surprised. He wasn't really my pick. So in your opinion, what would it take for you to change your mind on John Schneider? What do you need to see in 2023 to be like, you know what? Touche, well done.
And that's part of my surprise, Scott, is because it has to be a World Series championship. That's part of my surprise. This is the most important hire in franchise history. For sure, it's the most important hire. And I say that because, guys, just put yourself, just allow a quick daydream. If the Slim Daddy Vladdy era comes and goes in Toronto and there's not a World Series championship, we would consider that an absolute failure. This is the management hire right here that has to take them to that championship. Now, I wasn't crazy about a lot of the things I saw from John Schneider as a manager, but in particular, what I didn't get, and we talk about Shapiro and Atkins so good with kicking the tires, this is the one where I just didn't understand the timing of it. To not even wait until the World Series is done. If you bring in a Bochy or a Ron Wash, if you bring in a manager that has experience and you don't win a championship, if I'm Shapiro and Atkins, I think you can fall back on that and say, man, we brought in this guy with the experience. We thought that was the next step. You, Shapiro and Atkins, have yet again gone out of your way to give a first-time manager the keys to this franchise, the keys to a franchise whose playoff contention window is open. And my whole point is, everyone kept saying, but Craig, if they think he's the right guy for the job, why not strike right now? My whole point on that was, if he's the right guy for the job right now, then he must be the right guy for the job 2 years from now. He must be the right guy for the job 2 months from now. Hell, he must be the right guy for the job 2 weeks from now. So what's wrong with letting the World Series end? Now every coach, like Kevin Long, the Phillies hitting coach, is going to get a lot of consideration. Now every coach is in play. You put that net out, you're going to hear back from people that you never thought would be interested in that position.
Yeah.
And you know what we missed here, Scott? You know what GMs do a lot that's sneaky? They'll literally have an idea. I want Scott to be my guy, but they will bring in other people just to hear their interviews and get ideas. Because the Jays didn't even do that. So that was my surprise. If John Schneider is the right guy in that moment, then 2 weeks later, when proper due diligence was done on all the other managers available out there, he still would have been the guy. In fact, you say, what could convince someone like you, Craig? That would have convinced someone like me. If they did the proper search, held the press conference and say, I'll tell you, Blue Jay fans, we went into this thinking John Schneider was the guy, and we interviewed X amount of people, and now we're dead certain that John Schneider is the guy, I'd be way more on board if it was something like that. So
see, and this
whole darn thing.
This thought process, Craig, also has me like you've got me on board. I like John Schneider. And I know you do too. And this is the thing, for anyone listening to this portion of the conversation, I hope you understand that I'm not necessarily against John Schneider as a big league manager. Just I'm uncertain if he has it within him to take us to the promised land. I hope he does. And I would love to be wrong on this. I thought the way they handled the whole process was weird. Number one, coming out and being like, he's probably our guy, but maybe not. We're going to do our due diligence. I was like, okay, weird way to handle that, but at least they're doing their due diligence. But then it felt like they dragged it out for 2 weeks, didn't wait for the World Series to end, and then still just went with him. And I just, we'll see how it plays out. Uh-huh. I mean, it's tough to shit on a decision that has yet to, show if it's the right or wrong decision, right? It's like everyone who's mad about this trade. It's tough to judge this trade until we see exactly how it all plays out.
But it has informed, I think, a lot of our thinking. Well, maybe I'll just speak for myself. It's informed a lot of my thinking in this offseason. It's one of the pros, for example, in a Nemo call, for example, for me. Because if you had Nemo, Springer, Nemo, Slim Daddy, Vladdy, Kirk and Bo, like I think your lineup plays itself. That was one of my major issues with John Schneider. I did not like one lineup that he put out. All him putting Slim Daddy Vladdy in the two spot, I thought was a blunder from day. I didn't like the lineup Schneider did. So that's why I'm looking at these free agencies and that, and who can we bring in a Trey Turner as your slam dunk number two. I would like a scenario to be created where the lineup decisions are taken out of John Schneider's hands, where it's a lineup that writes itself, and John Schneider's job here is to keep the guys motivated, keep that good clubhouse, because he does seem to have the personality for things like that.
I sure love talking baseball with you, my dude. This is great. we're approaching the 1 hour mark, so we'll start wrapping up here, but I did want to talk starting pitching with you before we do that. Okay, so last year you were very against the Yusei Kikuchi signing, which truly did turn out to be 100% right. And I also know that you're such a big Jays fan, you would have loved to have been wrong on that. Oh. I'm well aware, right? Like, so I'm curious, when you look at Yusei Kikuchi this year, is he a lost cause, or do you see the possibility of maybe him being able to contribute, even if it's not to the value of $10 million a year? Can he contribute in 2023, in your opinion?
The only thing that has me optimistic at all about Yusei Kikuchi this season is a massive reduction in salary and a massive reduction in expectations. Now, if he does anything, if he's just not the worst pitcher we've ever seen in our lives, he's taken a step forward. I know that sounds, well, I know that sounds silly, but that's really, so can he, with no pressure on him at all? Because remember now, the Jays at $16 million, they sent him to the bullpen kicking and screaming. They sent him to the bullpen when the media and the fan base made it clear that you can't. We've been saying this for a couple of weeks now, John Schneider. You cannot run. You're in a pennant race, John Schneider. You cannot run Yusei Kikuchi out there again. It was the Jays came to that decision kicking and screaming, and it was only because of the outside noise. They kept running him out there every fifth day. That contract, I felt they had to. This season, I don't think they'll be forced to do that. We've talked before, and I know that you're way on board with the 2023 potential of a Mitch White, who they feel can have two or three snags that they see in his delivery, and they can have him be the Ross Stripling 2.0. That's the only thing the Blue Jay fan base agrees on, 1,000%. If there was an unsung hero MVP this season, it was Ross Stripling. Now Shapiro and Atkins are saying, we found Ross Stripling 2.0. That's a yes, please. So does that lessen what you need to get out of Kikuchi? I hope so. So
Craig, let's talk Mitch White for a second, because I was a little surprised last night on Long Toss to find out that I was one of the only ones on that panel. I think I was the only one who still thinks Mitch White could have some real value to this team. I understand the being down on him, because he was very disappointing last season. But I like that he has options. I like we can stick him in AAA. I really prefer him to, if there's bad tacos in that rotation, I prefer him to Casey Lawrence every single time. No offense to Casey Lawrence and Trent Thornton and Thomas Hatch. And I mean, the options last season in AAA were not great. And I like that there is some insular depth now with the likes of a Mitch White. Do you view him the same way, or where are you at on Mitch White? And do you think that there is potential that down the road, we do see some value out of this guy?
I'll be stunned if we don't get value out of Mitch White. I think Mitch White was Atkins said the day of the trade, they see two or three tweaks that they can make in his mechanics in the off season when he can work with Pete Walker. So those tweaks didn't get a chance to be put in. And B, he came to this team thinking he's going to be a mop-up guy, something like that. All of a sudden during a pennant race, start every fifth day. Like, he was thrust into way more of a position than what they thought.
Out of necessity because of how bad Kikuchi was.
Exactly correct. So many have put the period at the end of who Mitch White is as a pitcher. I don't think we've seen the potential for Mitch White here as a pitcher. I don't think he's a Robbie Ray success project, but just we've seen pitchers that Shapiro and Atkins have said, you know what's off with this pitcher is A and B. You know who's outstanding at turning around A and B? Our guy Pete Walker. Let's bring that guy. We've seen this more than once. So I won't be surprised with that at all. I think they love the versatility that he brings to them. Again, I'm just going to say, if they're right, if Shapiro and Atkins are right, and they found the next Ross Stripling, this is a yes, please scenario.
So let's end on who we think and what you think they need in that starting rotation. We just watched Mike Clevinger get signed to a one-year reclamation deal last night, $8 million over the weekend with the White Sox. And he kind of set the bar, I guess, for lack of a better term, the lower rung of the pitching options out there. If the Jays go out and do a similar deal on a Corey Kluber, a Johnny Cueto, Wade Miley, Kyle Gibson, these are kind of the guys in that kind of rung. Are you happy with that? Or are you only happy with that if they also go out and get a legitimate number three starter who's going to contribute to this rotation?
Boy, what a great question. Geez, tough call, because how do I finagle this answer? Because my instinct is I'd be happy either way, to be honest with you. But
yeah,
because I do want a top of the rotation. Justin Verlander, what an absolute heartbreaking moment for all of us as Blue Jay fans. If you notice, it was about 2 months into the season, and Verlander, just as an aside in an interview, was telling a story that in the offseason, there was a Friday night where he went to bed knowing he was going to wake up Saturday morning and sign with the Toronto Blue Jays. There was a night he went to bed, but on Friday, he knew he was signing with the Jays last offseason. By the time Saturday night ended, by the time he went to bed Saturday, he had re-upped with Houston. Crazy things happened during that Saturday. But my point being, that's how close Verlander was to becoming a Blue Jay. So the Verlanders, the DeGroms, I want a Carlos Rodon. The high-end pitchers, they are not it's not escaping their notice what's happening up here in Canada. Mm-hmm. People are saying, hey, great team, amazing fan base. Rep that entire country. So I do want the Blue Jays to be big game hunting for a Verlander, a DeGrom, somebody like that. If a Kershaw, if it's going to be, I just got some like a Zach Greinke, I'd be okay with a Severino, a Bassett. There's a lot of different veterans I would be okay with at the back of that rotation. But the but is, we'd have to see the season play out, because if Jose Barrios really is who he was in 2022, the worst ERA in all of baseball, then a fifth guy, a Bassett, something like that to mop up at the back of that rotation is not going to cut it. You're going to have a couple major holes. We saw what happened with the Blue Jays when they had a couple major holes this season. Ryu out with the injury, and Kikuchi had to really mix and match. And to your point, the arms in AAA just weren't there. So if you are going to, you know, settle on a Kluber or something like that, a fourth or fifth guy, then if the Jays are going to do that, then I really hope they've got extreme confidence that they're going to be able to turn around Jose Barrios. And there is cause for optimism there. I don't know the ins and outs, but it really seems like Barrios was going through a divorce. We've seen what this has done with Tom Brady this season, for example.
Yeah.
It really seemed like off-field stuff really entered into Barrios's 2022. So maybe he can get back to being that guy. But if you're the Blue Jays, you better be absolutely certain, because you got a ton of money tied up in Ryu and you got a ton of money tied up in Barrios. If you're not getting production from either one of these guys, that's a major issue that Corey Kluber does not solve.
Do you think I'm one of those guys where once a dude is in the league for 5 years, you could flip that baseball card over and look at his career average, and that's most likely what you're going to get. Are you at the point where you're happy if Berríos just returns to his career average of a 4 ERA and pitches 190 to 200 innings a year?
Absolutely.
That's a success, right? That's a success.
Yeah. Oh, the weirdest thing. So the name of the game is wins and losses. When Jose Berríos pitched for the Toronto Blue Jays, he pitched 16 games at Rogers Center. They lost two of them, and they totaled two runs. So yeah. Basically, when Berríos was on the mound and the offense did anything, the Jays won that game. So I'm still not out on Berríos, even if he comes back as that same pitcher. But an ERA in the fours, that would be such a big deal. Because the one of the issues with Berríos is in big games, he got blown up so early, and if they were often at the beginning of series, the first game of the season, for example, and the Jays had to get into that bullpen so darn quickly. And when that happens at the beginning of the series, there's nothing ideal about that. So if he can get that ERA back down to the fours, and a lot of people will be saying at that price tag, you're going to be excited about an ERA of four. Yeah. In this scenario,
yes, I will.
Because no matter what, we will not be asked. Look at Berríos probably wouldn't even gotten a start in that wild card round. In fact, against Seattle, we're not looking for Berríos to do the heavy lifting. We're just looking for him not to have the worst ERA in baseball. Manoah and Gausman are tasked with doing the heavy lifting in that rotation. We just need Berríos to not have the worst ERA in baseball.
Mr. Ballard, thank you so much for joining us. We always enjoy it so much, man. And I'm going to pressure you here to definitely reach out whenever you have some spare time, because we love having you on the show, my dude. For all of you watching right now, if you are still at this point in the video watching and you haven't hit like or subscribe yet, please do so. Whoa, offensive. Craig's offended if you haven't. So fix that little problem. Again, thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. You can always follow us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast. Craig, where do they follow you on Twitter?
Twitter, I'm at Craig Ballard 77. So Craig Ballard, my name, and then the number 77. And then on TikTok, I should know this, shouldn't I? I think it's just at J. It's Craig Ballard _ Jays Talk. And Jays Talk like TikTok, T-O-K.
So there you go.
T-O-K, yes.
Craig's always putting out all sorts of great content when it comes to when something happens in the Blue Jays landscape. Craig's always got some really insightful stuff to say. So check it out. Again, Craig, thank you very much for joining us.
I'll just tell you something I'm really excited about. I did this last year with the Raptors. You know, the advent calendar when December comes.
Yes.
You open the box. So I'm doing a Toronto Blue Jay advent calendar. So day one, for example, you know, Bob Baylor's a prominent day, a number one, we'll look at him. But of course, Tony Fernandez is the ultimate Blue Jay number one. So it's like a deep dive. So it's a lot. I think the Raptor fans and I had a lot of fun with it last year for the Raptors.
Yeah, I love that. I love you're doing that with the Blue Jays. That's great, man. That's so fun. Yeah. Right on. All right. So keep an eye out for that, Blue Jays fans. Again, Craig, thank you so much. To everyone watching, take care of yourselves. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drop. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.